Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to today's webcast. Aetna's commitment to IBM WebSphere Data Power Appliances drives faster SOA adoption and integration. This is the second part of a five-part series on succeeding with business agility, five forward-thinking organizations, brought to you by Information Week, IBM, UBM TechWeb. I'm Karen Bannon, and I'll be your moderator today. To ensure that this is as interactive as event as possible, I'd like to make just a few announcements before we begin. At this time, we recommend you disable your pop-up blockers. This webcast is designed to be interactive and makes use of pop-ups or widgets to help you interact with the presenters. You can launch these widgets from the docking tray at the bottom of your console. Some will open in a separate browser window. You can resize the widgets by dragging the lower right corner, move them by dragging the top bar, or minimize them by clicking on the blue button in the upper right-hand corner. During our webcast, you can ask questions at any time. Just type your question into the Ask a Question text area and then click the Submit button. Slides will advance automatically throughout our event. You can download a copy of our slides by clicking on the Download Slide icon, which is located below the presentation window. Towards the end of the program, we will ask for your feedback in a separate pop-up form. If you experience any technical problems, please click on our webcast help guide at the help icon located in the far right of the docking tray at the bottom of the webcast console. In addition, you can contact our technical support helpline, the number of which is located in the webcast help guide as well. And now, on to today's presentation. Aetna's commitment to IBM WebSphere Data Power Appliances drives faster SOA adoption and integration. We have three distinguished speakers, Preksha Patel, Andy Grohman, and Nimesh Shankaran. Preksha Patel is a web engineer with Aetna Web Technology Engineering. Preksha started at Aetna in 2005 as an application development doing J2EE and IBM WebSphere Data Power Appliance development. In 2008, she moved to the web engineering team where she works with WebSphere Data Power Appliances from an infrastructure perspective. Andy Grohman is a WebSphere Data Power Connectivity Leader at IBM. As the WebSphere Connectivity Competency Leader for North America and a client technical professional for WebSphere Data Power Appliances, Andy is based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Since 2007, he has worked closely with some of the largest data power customers in the world. Andy has 16 years of experience with IBM in a variety of development services and sales roles. Nimesh Shankaran is a senior engineer at Aetna. Nimesh is a senior engineer at the Web Systems Engineering Team at Aetna and has spent the past 10 years working for the architecture and administration of the IBM WebSphere suite of products. He is currently Aetna's Data Power Technical Team Lead, focusing on the architecture and implementation of data power technologies. And with that, I'd like to hand the presentation over to Andrew so we can get started. Over to you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Karen. Hey, everybody. Looks like we've got a great turnout for today's presentation, so really thank everybody for taking some time out of their day to join this exciting conversation about IBM WebSphere Data Power Appliances and, more importantly, the success that Aetna has had with Data Power over the years. We really have a true historic relationship between IBM and Aetna over the years with Data Power, and like I said, we're excited to be here today to talk about this a little bit. So with that, let me introduce today's agenda. I'm going to spend a few minutes just introducing the WebSphere Data Power Appliances to make sure everybody is level set on what it is we're going to talk about, the technology involved here. I'll talk a little bit about the healthcare insurance industry challenges from IBM's perspective, and then we'll turn it over to Nimesh and Preksha, who will take us through Aetna's specific experiences with Data Power over the years. And specifically, the specific challenges that they've faced, how Data Power has helped them overcome those challenges, the initial benefits they've seen, and most importantly, the evolution that Data Power has experienced at Aetna. We'll recap with some lessons learned, and then we'll talk a little bit about the highly collaborative relationship IBM and Aetna has enjoyed. And then we'll open it up for Q&A. So with that, what are the WebSphere Data Power Appliances? Simply put, it is a 1U or 2U rack-mountable appliance that provides secure connectivity and integration solutions for your infrastructure. We usually talk about Data Power in four important pillars. We talk about security, simplicity, acceleration, and governance. With respect to security, it's important to understand that Data Power is truly built from the ground up to be a secure device. From its physical characteristics and tamper-proof casing to all of its encrypted and signed firmware and protected images that we put on the appliance itself, it's really built to be very secure, built to run in your DMZ, built to run in internal, and to lock everything down very securely. We have lots of functionality within the appliances that help you integrate your service-oriented architecture, provide Web 2.0 interfaces and RESTful interfaces to emerging mobile applications. We do a lot of B2B-focused integrations and security as well. And we can even provide some secure connectors to your cloud-based environments. So there's a lot of different ways that Data Power can help secure your infrastructure. We talked about simplicity. Being an appliance, it dramatically reduces the total cost of ownership of traditional software on server solutions by reducing the amount of maintenance and overhead through our firmware-driven approach. More importantly, our configuration-driven approach for creating connectivity solutions makes it very easy to stand up Data Power, and within minutes and hours, you can implement some pretty advanced integration solutions. And to that end, we focus on accelerating your time to value. And I usually talk about acceleration from two aspects. Certainly, everything that goes into the Data Power hardware is built to perform very, very quickly. We have optimized network interface cards. We have optimized XML processing chips within the appliance. And all that combines together to give you a very, very high-performant environment. But we also talk about accelerating your time to value. And again, that goes back to our appliance-driven approach and configuration-driven approach. And hopefully through drag-and-drop interfaces, you can very quickly stand up, like I said, complex integrations very quickly. And then underscoring all this stuff is governance. So Data Power provides an awful lot of capability for helping you manage and govern your IT infrastructure, whether it be integration with some of our service registry and repository tools or other access policy manager tools to help you, manage that security policy and access policy from other tools and use Data Power as the enforcement point to protect that traffic flowing through your network. At the end of the day, we see a Data Power appliance providing superior performance and hardened security, helping you improve your return on investment with a lower overall total cost of ownership. So specifically, when we take Data Power and we start looking at the healthcare industry, there are a number of challenges that Aetna in particular, but the industry in general, faces. We talk a lot about the need, to secure the personal health information, right, and personally identifiable information. Right, so when you're dealing with this highly sensitive information, it's important to have a very, very secure solution, and Data Power provides that security in a variety of ways. It's important to understand that a lot of this data lives in a variety of systems, very heterogeneous systems, some of them legacy, some of them brand new cutting edge stuff, and so you'll need a solution that can speak that heterogeneous language and interoperate in that environment well. Also important is health insurance is a very competitive industry, and so you need products that provide market advantages, give you ability to respond quickly to quickly changing factors and a changing marketplace. And again, Aetna will take us through how Data Power helps them achieve those goals. And like I mentioned, highly heterogeneous systems is a hallmark of the health insurance industry, and I think that probably applies to most industries we see today. So with that, I will turn it over to Preksha and Nimesh, who will take us through their specific experiences at Aetna. Preksha?
Thank you, Andy. Great job. Welcome, everyone. It's wonderful to see all these people here, and since we have folks from all over the place, I wanted to do a quick overview of what Aetna is and who they are in the industry. Of course, we're a healthcare company, and we mainly deal with healthcare, dental, pharmacy, group life, disability, and also employee benefits. A quick overview of our membership, we are over 18 million medical members, over 13 million dental, and over 8 million pharmacy. We offer, I guess, a plethora of different products to our members as well as our providers, and we take pride in the products that we build and support here at Aetna. So just I'll keep the slide up for a quick second just because there's a lot of information, but that's kind of Aetna in a nutshell. Okay, I'm going to move on. So Andy covered a lot of the general healthcare industry challenges, and a lot of the Aetna challenges kind of flow along that line. You know, they parallel exactly what Andy kind of went over. Aetna is a very mainframe-oriented, originally all our data lives on the mainframe. So we were looking for a way when the web services kind of exploded here, a way to kind of easily share this information with web services looking for data on the mainframe. How do we quickly transform these different various data formats as fast as we can and as easily as possible? So, you know, those were kinds of the things we were looking at. We have different platforms here at Aetna. We have CACS, we have a web platform, .NET. Everything you name it, we have it. The other part that we had to deal with all this data going back and forth between one backend to another, we were concerned about security. We have a lot of important information about you, providers, and we do not want anyone getting a hold of that. Andy kind of covered some of that, but you know, we are looking to protect our PCI, our PHI, our PII data, and that was important to do as far as, you know, exposing all these services. We want to make sure we keep them secure. What we did here at Aetna years ago when we were looking into solving this problem space was to do a technical evaluation, and that's not different from any other company whatsoever. So we asked ourselves these questions. How can we quickly do transformations, make it easier to do, seamlessly integrate this mainframe-heavy environment and expose these web services in a way that was simple? We wanted to do quick XML transformation, and we also wanted to apply security. Now, you know, security itself is a complicated space, as well as integrating and building maps and doing them quickly. So all these questions came to the table, as well as how can we standardize and build an environment that is simpler than what we have. You know, Aetna before Data Power was building services using code, and it was hard to say, you know, one area domain of Aetna was trying to get at data on the mainframe, and they built their own Java code and maps to do so. Then another, say the member area, came and did the same thing. So, you know, you have five different domains doing five different implementations of Java code to get at some mainframe data, and it's very difficult to troubleshoot, to help support that type of environment. And, you know, we're looking for a way to easily build a reusable environment. And we looked at a couple different options, and Data Power was one of the ones that really stood out in a way that we really felt it was a good fit. That being said, I'm going to hand these slides off to Nimesh, and he's going to talk about Data Power at Aetna.
Hello, everybody, and this is Nimesh. Thank you all for joining this presentation, and I welcome you all again. And thanks, Preksha, for going over all the challenges that Aetna faced before we brought Data Power in. And to overcome these challenges is what we brought Data Power into Aetna for. In particular, the two most important challenges, right, which is implementing WS security for web services being the one of the challenges. And the second challenge, as Preksha said, was to transform data from XML to copybook and copybook back to XML, XML being the format that Java applications prefer, and copybook is the CICS COBOL applications would understand the copybook format, and to do this transformation. So I've been at the web, my team, web engineering, you know, we are the ones who roll out all the infrastructure when any web-related product comes in, and in the last 10 years' experience, I've seen that the biggest challenge when we bring a particular product in is adoption. right? I mean, nobody wants to be the first ones in the line to adopt a brand new technology, and they want it to be more baked, and they don't want to take the risk of adopting something brand new, and they are willing to spend a little more money or resources at something that's baked in. And we assume that that's exactly what we're going to have with Datafar as well. And we were surprised because, you know, we did have adoption challenge, but of a different kind. Seemed like everybody wanted to jump into this. Every single project that came along the way had something to do with Datafar or another. And I'll give this in terms of numbers so this would make more sense, right? So real services that we put into Datafar was like about 3 years back. So in the last 3 years, you know, where almost nothing was flowing through our systems to today, where we have more than 8 million requests flowing through our systems every day. And we started off with like 4 boxes. We have 16 today in production. And with just a few handful of services that we piloted, today we have more than 200. And to do a rough math, we have one major release every quarter. So that's 4 releases a year and 200 services in 3 years. That's about 17, 18 services every release. And to imagine putting 17 or 18 services every release, now we are not counting the code fixes here, just brand new service, right? It's virtually impossible with the kind of APLC processes and everything that we have here at IPNA. It's almost impossible to have those kind of numbers in place without Datafar or some other such tool that we have. And there are many reasons why we had such an exponential growth of web services once we had Datafar. And just to zone in on the one important reason, it's because of the fact that we can deploy web services at a much quicker rate with Datafar than without. And there are many more reasons, and hopefully at the end of this presentation, those will be evident as well. So we started off with just the XI50 boxes. To do the transformations and security, and we soon realized that that would not cut it for us. So we have now 2 completely different tiers, one tier that does security, and those are the XS40 boxes, and the other tier that does transformation, which are the XI50 boxes. And you know, on the security devices, you know, that's where we put in our WS proxies to enforce WS security. The chosen mechanism that we have at Aetna is to use X509 certificates to do that. And we also do XML validations, enforce SLMs, security, and error validations, logging, and those type of stuff. And I have another couple of charts down the line that goes into these details. At Aetna, we have a shared environment. And what that means is, you know, across all the different business domains, we have the same infrastructure for Datafar that caters to all services cross-domain. And this has really helped us a lot because we don't have to reproduce the different environments that we have across each and every one of these domains. Like we have all the way from lab to production, like most companies would. We have a very robust lab. And, you know, our lab has got at least one service that pertains to all the different patterns of things that we do in production. Our lab has got everything from WebSphere, the different flavors of that, .NET, all the way through to mainframe, CICS, and MQ. So whenever a new pattern evolves, we make sure that we test this out in the lab, and we also test out all the services when we have a firmware upgrade and such, so that when something hits development, it's well baked in. All the code and instrumentation and all the surrounding scripting and everything is in place before something moves into development. I'm rushing through. Sorry, apologize about that. I have just a lot of material to cover, so that's why I'm speaking really fast. And we also have a very good performance lab. Performance lab was a little bit difficult in the beginning because we had to don a different hat. We are very used to performance testing of web applications, and we had to switch gears when we are performance testing a web service. So we had to, for instance, figure out how to do tests of multiple services at the same time using SOAP UI and things like that. So we got through that learning curve, and so now by the time a service gets filtered from lab all the way through to production, our production is pretty solid. Now what I'll do is I'll go through some of the request flow patterns that we commonly have for the most important use cases here at Aetna. What you're seeing on the screen right now is a high-level topology diagram, and the vertical lines that you see is a firewall, and everything on the left of the firewall is the external network, and everything on the right of the firewall you're seeing is our internal network, and we have the DMZ in the middle. And the yellow boxes over there, that's the ones that we mentioned is doing the security. And everything on the right side of those yellow boxes, the XS40s, that's where the web services reside. So this is the request flow for getting to a web service that's on the back end. And the back end typically is a web share application server on Linux or mainframe. You've got IIS, you've got .NET applications, or you've got CICS. As Preksha said, that's where we have our core business running. And we have, that's the most important use case for us, where we want to expose out these business services to the Java front-end applications. And you see that you have internal clients and external clients. And these internal clients are, again, IIS or .NET, WebSphere or CICS. And you would see that everything is flowing through these boxes, right, these yellow boxes. The reason for that is that these boxes not just do security, but they also double up to what we internally at Aetna call as the routing devices. Because the reason why we call it the routing devices is because everything flows through these boxes, and it's these boxes that look at a service and say, hey, where is the backend? Let me send it to the correct backend. Hey, okay, this has got to go to WebSphere, so let me send it there. Or, oh, look at this. This has got to go to CICS, but how do I send it to CICS? I'm sure if it is going to CICS, it would need some form of transformation, because what is coming into me is SOAP over HTTP, and a CICS does not understand that. So let me send it to the transformation devices. That's another set of devices that take this information and transform it into the copybook format and send it to an MQ, which is picked up by CICS on the back end, right? And I've got a little bit of a zoned-in view of this in my next slide. But this picture is an evolution of some of the standards that we put in place. And one of the important standards that we have is that we have a single point for entry for any web service. And that's an outcome of another standard that Enterprise Architecture had, which basically states that, I missed my train of thought, but yeah, so this is the single point of entry for all web services, and I forgot. But anyways, I'll skip over that. Another standard that we have is that we don't have any distinction between an external request and an internal request, right? So we consider all requests that comes in for a web service with the same security level and implement the same security standards regardless of whether it's an external service or it's an internal service. And in this diagram, what you would see is that there is no data power boxes in our DMZ, and we initially started off with having data power boxes in the DMZ, and we pulled it out because the advantage that we got out of putting a box in the DMZ was not enough to overcome some of the challenges that we internally faced, and I'm thinking that could potentially be particular for Aetna. We have our back-end services being consumed both by internal and external services, so we had to kind of duplicate out our security in both places, in the DMZ as well as in the internal network, and we replaced out these boxes with the existing web servers that we already had. So we created a few more instances of the web server, IHS instances, and basically proxied the request into the internal network. So what you're seeing is that all the requests that are coming in, on this chart at least, these are all SOAP over HTTP. And I will move over to the next chart that I said, where I'm zooming into the next view. And here, what you're seeing is that you have these transformation boxes, and the other mechanism of, or the other protocol that we support is MQ, and that's when, a CICS service, for instance, a CICS consumer wants to call a service that's living out on WebSphere, for instance. So it puts something on MQ, which DataPower picks it up, and it passes it on to WebSphere after doing protocol transformation and data transformation. So that's the second request flow pattern that we have. The important thing that you see here is that the backend is completely abstracted. So that's one huge plus with data power, where the consumer is not aware where the web service is served out from. It could be from .NET or it could be from CICS, and the consumer does not need to make any code changes or code anything different depending upon the backend. I think I've covered all the most important standards and patterns that we have, except the one thing that I lost my train of thought on. So with that, I'll kind of hand it over back to you, Preksha, for going over some of the benefits that we have derived out of using Data Power.
Hi, everyone. So initially, we brought Data Power in, as we've been talking about, as integration. There was a lot of these transformations, which we've talked about a lot already, and it was the fact that Data Power could allow us to quickly integrate and get these transformations done. And originally I said we were doing code-based transformations. So here at Aetna, and I don't know about other companies, that when you make a change to an application ER, you have to repackage it and deploy it out through your environment and retest. And there's still some of those items of migrating out your changes and testing, but with Data Power and the way we've kind of implemented the map transformations, it's much simpler. We push out a map, Data Power picks it up, and that is done through a simpler process outside of a huge code lifecycle process. This is a piece of code, but the way we handle it is much more simpler. We do integrate it into a source repository, but the way we're not having to rebuild and repackage and go through the overhead of an application deploy, which can have its own issues in itself. The ER could have other code in it, application-related code. So this simplifies it and separates out that map transformation away from application code. It's fairly easy to build a transformation map. There, IBM offers another great piece of product that is the Design Studio, which you can use to build these maps. And along with the integration piece of Data Power, there's also, I'm sure you guys have heard, Enterprise Service Bus, and when you hear about SOA, you hear about the Enterprise Service Bus. With Aetna, we had our own Enterprise Service Bus that was kind of implemented here previously to Data Power arriving. And what was interesting there is that the fact that Data Power fit very nicely into that world, we were to take those standards that we kind of started with the service bus and getting traffic and data moved around to Data Power. And those standards have since been moved over, so the Data Power piece has been a nice clip into our Aetna internal service bus, because we take those standards that we built and say, oh, well, if you want to get to something that is reachable through the service bus, Data Power can do this, and it's simple. So some of that really helps. It helps control all the different exposures to your services. The providers, say their mainframe in this case, we have a lot more of mainframe providers, is that you can easily say, hey, here's how you call a service. You don't, like Nimesh said, you don't have to worry about who you're talking to. And also the way we kind of brought Data Power in and broke it up within Aetna as an department, we have a one-stop area of expertise that kind of deals with the transformation maps and how they expose these mainframe services. So it made things a lot easier and easier to go to one place. So the agility and flexibility is there with Data Power, a lot with the fact that you can code your own XSLTs and build your own, use the Data Power extensions to build what you need and make it as reusable as possible. As far as like our return on investment benefit, Data Power was initially brought in to solve a problem, and with all problems, people don't generally just jump into a solution unless it does bring a return on investment. I don't have exact numbers, but I can say that with the fact we see the return on investment with every project that comes through. We found that from a perspective of trying to get a map rolled out, a change done, Like I said before, we can quickly get a change to a map out faster than a deploy of an ear, which may have to go through a regression test and things like that. I mean, we obviously do a set of regression tests, but in this case, we're dealing with a regression test for that specific map change outside of the entire ear. So in that case, the return on investment is the speed of delivery that we can get certain solutions out and expose these web services. So a lot of that comes from individual projects that make up a big return of investment. And from a security perspective, we see a lot of that. So as data power evolved at Aetna, Nimesh said we started with a couple of XI50 devices, and then we brought in some XS40s. Like, we built up to this whole tiered environment and how we handle our traffic. With the evolution of which hardware we brought in, we also had an evolution of how data power was used. We talked a lot about security previously as well. We have found that data power has brought in quite a bit of help and ease to our security. When we have these projects that come out, we today use a lot of, we started with simple things like X509 for verifying signing, and data power does that very easily. It breaks down these components of a big picture for you to understand, here's what makes up a verify, here's what makes up a sign, here's what makes up SSL, and it simplifies these difficult concepts of security. So data power definitely helps in that space. A lot of it has to do with the GUI data power has for configuring security. It makes those things very easy. So because that's the case, a lot of the security usage really blew up here, and we've had gone from simple verify and sign to starting to expose better securing our SSO solutions. Data power is just not a for data, but security. It's not just an integration point for that. So it's a lot there. One of the big projects that really data power was such a simple thing that added such a big benefit was we had an outside customer who was starting to send some of their SAML assertion with a lot more private data. And we had to figure out a quick way to be able to encrypt that data, get it through Aetna, and get the customer what they wanted. And this solution we implemented in data power. We put data power in front of our SSO application in the back end, and we were able to implement this out in literally no time. In this case, the developers and folks that were working on this project didn't know enough about security. They also didn't have enough time to learn it and implement it through a code implementation. So it was a really big benefit to us for this. We actually gained customers and members from being able to get the solution out as fast, and it's actually become a great strategic solution as we have gotten a lot more customers involved in doing this. So it was great. Other side ones are Kerberos, single sign-on, we already kind of talked about. So, and before I also said with the XSLTs and the extension functions that data power has, it makes the usage much easier. So I guess I can't say enough for that. But as you saw in Nimesh's slides too, we've evolved and things are changing, and they're still changing. A mobile is coming down the road. Aetna's really hands-on with those things, and we just really feel data power seems to be flexible enough to get into those spaces, and it's very beneficial. So I did want to move on to Nimesh. He's going to talk about some of the lessons learned related to data power. Nothing is smooth. So, we want to share this information with you.
Thanks, Preksha, and hello again. This slide is about some of the lessons that we learned at Aetna in the 4 years that we've had experience with data power. So this would probably resonate well with people who are in the nascent stages of implementing data power. What did we do right? What did we do wrong? And what can we learn out of it, right? And one thing that immediately that we saw is that, your use cases will grow, right? Because typically when we bring a product in, it's for a particular business unit who wants to use it in a particular fashion, and we bring a product in to, like for instance, we want to expose a business service out to the Java world, right? So to do transformations is the use case, but the product itself is having so many capabilities, and we would soon find that those capabilities are done better on Data Power than on products that are already available in-house that does the same thing, that more and more people want to use Data Power. And we cannot say no because it's the business that funds the project ultimately. So we can't say no because we are not prepared for a particular use case. So we'll have to think about this ahead of time and see how this device is going to evolve 2 years down the line and plan today for that. You know, like I said, you know, you feed the box data of type A, you get data of type B out of it, and, you know, we think that the box is an island, but actually it's the opposite of it. The box is so well connected that we realize that the success of Data Power lies in the support that we get from all the different teams that are supporting this. Like, for instance, here at Aetna, right, web engineering owns Data Power. And we are a logical fit because we already own all the other web products, and we are already interfacing with a multitude of teams. On one side, we are interfacing with the development community on a day-to-day basis, and then we turn around and interface with all the infrastructure teams, like performance engineering, like we are really tight with enterprise architecture in terms of, you know, whenever a new pattern evolves, whenever a new standard needs to be established, you know, we are tight with the enterprise architecture team to do all that, with security engineering and networking. And our team dons the hat of so many different teams all at the same time because, you know, Data Power is classified, IBM classifies it as software, but in all reality, it's a hardware device, and you need to have a little bit of a networking background, a little bit of storage management background. The team wouldn't have to do you know, scripting on Soma, Jython, Perl, and the nature of such. So placement of the device in the correct organization is, I'd say, quite critical in the success of Data Power. And in the success of Data Power lies the success of SOA at Aetna for us. So that's probably the first couple of things that that we learned. And let me go to this next slide now. And the other thing, like Preksha mentioned, was the whole thought about centralization, right? So like other organizations, we also have these business units, like plan, member, claim, provider, and we are not just centralized in terms of an infrastructure for Data Power, but we are also centralized in terms of the development of code on Data Power and the management of Data Power itself. So like, this is contrasting to what we currently do with other technologies, like for WebSphere, and we have developers developing Java across all the different organizations and across different geographic locations. But then Data Power, when it came in, it was a brand new technology, and there was definitely a learning curve. So we imposed this learning curve on one centralized team, and we gave the benefits of Data Power to all the architects who are cross-domain. So the demand for having a service developed came from the architecture teams, and it's the development teams that it was a single development team that already had the expertise to develop the services. So that was a big reason why people were not hesitant to move to the new technology, because hey, they don't have to develop it. So that is one reason why things really grew at an exponential pace. So yeah, business is always good. So growing and having more and more services, enterprise business services, as we call it, right? Because these are cross-domain, across all the platforms, and there is a lot of cross-domain calls, a service calling another service, an application in domain one calling a service in domain two. So that's the essence of the whole SOA, you know, shared reuse and stuff like that. So centralization, that's another core takeaway if we were to. And lucky enough, we started off in the right path, so we reap the benefits of this as well. The next lessons learned, I would say, is the establishing of standards and patterns and best practices ahead of time, especially if you're going to be using this as a security device, WS Security. There are so many questions around this. You need to answer these questions ahead of time. How are we going to do the WS Security? Are we going to use, what are the different patterns? Are we going to use X509? Are we going to use username token profile. Okay, so we are using X509. How do we exactly code this, right? When we want to verify, when we want to sign in WebSphere and IIS, so what do we do, right? And it is always easier to prototype all your patterns ahead of time and publish them out somewhere that the development community can use. And it's all, and because these questions are going to be asked over and over again, especially security related ones. You know, how do we do security, right? And in terms of, hey, are we having mutual authentication? Do we support Kerberos? And if all this is published out, it's easier to point to a website and say, hey, that's how you want to do it, rather than reinventing the wheel each time. And ahead of time is the essence of this whole thing, because we had an issue where, you know, when we brought the first service in, we had not really baked the pattern, and we decided to sign on Data Power. I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty details, but basically we realized after the fact that, okay, we've put the service in place, and there are 5 consumers now, and we have a security hole. And to address that, this is a huge project, because we have to change the code in so many different consumers, and also the provider and Data Power in the middle, and all this has to be happening synchronously, and it was quite difficult to retrofit, and anything to do with security, retrofitting it is going to be really difficult after the fact. So that's another takeaway, and the another, and of course, you know, you have to take it for granted that the rate of adoption is going to be phenomenal. And when you have this kind of a rate of adoption, when you go into the details, right, an explosion of the number of web services, depending upon your usage, what does that mean to you? Does that mean that you're going to have, 2 years down the line, are you going to have 200 domains? That's not going to be a supportable model. Are you going to have 200 web services in the domain? Again, that's not going to be supportable. Or if you're going to do transformations, are you going to have 200 multi-protocol gateways, you know? And again, that's not going to be supportable. So you'll have to see the endpoint, and like, for instance, you may have to come up with common framework services that and these kind of things are more geared towards your necessities. Like, for example, we wanted to collapse a bunch of multi-protocol gateways into one, and we have this common framework that looks at an incoming request and says, hey, okay, so you are belonging to this frame, this kind of a pattern, so I will send you here, and the framework looks at it and says, hey, okay, this is the transformation map that I want to apply for you, and that's the MQ that I want to send the request to, and this is the MQ that I'll listen for the response. And those type of, so this is what we essentially have done with the frameworks is collapse like 50 different services that belong to a particular pattern into one multi-protocol gateway. Otherwise, it's going to be, we cannot sustain the growth rate of web services. And these are important standard decisions that we had to make, and we had worked very closely with IBM on all of these, you know, bouncing ideas back and forth, getting feedbacks, and to go over the relationship that we had with IBM through the whole process, I hand it back to you, Preksha. Thank you.
Okay. So this is really quick, but we work with IBM a lot. We have quite a bit of collaboration with them, starting from product support, of course, that you purchase, but also lab advocacy programs where we work with a lab advocate that is intimate with Data Power, Aetna, the implementations, and the use. So that is very beneficial, and we meet on a, you know, it all depends on what's going on that time of year, how busy we are, but what is important at the time and what we're trying to learn. So we use that a lot. Aetna provides a lot of information to IBM as a whole, the Data Power team, about our implementations, not just the lab advocate. So we can help them build a robust testing environment for Data Power appliances. As some of you may know, Data Power can do a lot of things and be used for many, many different things. I mean, across, 100 companies, I'm sure there's so many different uses. So it's very important to share those uses with IBM so they can test firmware better and deliver a better product to everybody. And that's kind of what we try to help do. The most beneficial that we've seen with the Lab Advocate program and also with across product discussions to help integration between all the IBM products. You know, it's very beneficial to have those types of meetings. We have group touch points with Tivoli, WebSphere, MQ, and Application Server, because Data Power is an integration product. It needs all these things. So what I'm going to do is pass this on really quick to Nimesh, and he'll go over quickly what some of that cross-product integration has provided.
Thanks, Reksha. And this is a narration, an interesting narration of the experience that we have or had at Aetna. And you know, in the beginning, when we had, as I mentioned, we were surprised with this growth of services, and we were not fully prepared for it. And our on-call pager was quite scary. You know, we jump onto the call and we are asked basic questions that that we are expected to answer. Hey, a web service is slow on the back end or somewhere. Can you tell us how much time it took on Data Power for that web service to perform? Or can you tell if all the boxes are slow or just that one Data Power box is slow? Or things like that, which we were expected to, you know, provide immediate answers. We did not have the answers for that. And some of the things that really helped us was, you know, this Data Power throws a lot of introspection. We came to know that, you know, they have something called the latency logs that is basically a logging that can be turned on Data Power, which throws a ton of information in space delimited numbers, and it's quick to glean that information. But the problem is that it is not easily human readable, so we'll have to take that out, parse it through a parser, and then we'll know exactly what happened within Data Power. And we thought that kind of an information, we should be able to. We already have a working Tivoli infrastructure here in house. We have TEP, Tivoli Enterprise Portal, that can parse these kind of information for MQ folks, for WebSphere. So why not for Data Power, right? So we got. Got in touch with our on-site deployment consultant at IBM, who set up a call with the Data Power product development and Tivoli product development, and we provided this feedback. And I'm sure other people have provided it too, because now we have this product that it's a part of Tivoli. It's the IT Camp for Data Power is what it's called, and it's capable of sucking in the latency information and provide wonderful graphs and charts that we can quickly use and jump into a production call. In a couple of clicks, we know exactly what's happening. We can get a top 10 offender list, for instance. So which are the services that are running the slowest top 10 in production in a click of a couple of buttons? And then we can narrow down. I'll push to the next slide. Sorry about that. This kind of chart you are seeing now for us in production. This is probably from production or QA, I'm not sure. But this is what you would see in a push of a couple of buttons, and then we can drill down into the service that we are more interested in, and we get a chart like this. And what this chart really tells you is that the time it has taken for this particular service, averaged out in the last 1 hour, is like a millisecond within Data Power. So this transformation of data took like a millisecond, and then Data Power is waiting on the back end for like 14 seconds for a response. So we go on to this immediate response team IRT call that we have troubleshooting this, and I send this out to people, and that sends pushes the problem away from Data Power at least. So the on-call itself has gotten less scary right now. So this is the outcome of, you know, some of the relationships that we've had with Data Power. It's mutually fruitful, and in return we get products like these. So next, to talk about what's coming down the pipeline for us, I'll hand it back to you, Preksha.
Okay. So quickly, as we're running short on time here, we're recently working on hardware migrations. You know, this is hardware, and it does need to be updated, and we are moving from our current XI50 hardware to a new hardware and working on migration plans and things like that. As part of that, we're trying to fit in some new, you know, lessons from our lessons learned, how we can better implement Data Power through our environment. So that's kind of some of the stuff we're working on, testing all the different hardware types and comparing performance data. And it's really cool to see the benefits of what they've changed. So as far as integration, we're looking at integrating with WSRR, and we're working with a couple of teams here at Aetna to do that, as well as IBM. And we're also, you know, there's always new security patterns coming down the pipeline. You never know what kind of crazy map transformations may come down the pipeline too. So we're always working on those things. And So really quickly, I'll hand it off to Andy to close us out.
Great. Thank you very much. I mean, that's just fascinating stuff, Nimesh, Preksha. I can't thank the two of you enough to take your time and you know, present this really fascinating integration and evolution you've had with Data Powered Aetna. Hopefully this helps open the eyes of some of the audience today on you know, the benefits and possibilities we have here with Data Power. I think at this point I'm going to open it up for a Q&A. Is that right, Karen?
It is, but actually before we get to the Q&A, we'd just like to ask everyone to please fill out a feedback form that's opening on their computer. To complete the feedback form, please press the Submit Answer button at the bottom of the page. Thanks so much in advance for filling out our feedback form. Participation in the survey allows us to better serve you. And with that, on to our question and answer portion of our events. As a reminder, to participate, just type your question into the question box and click the Submit Question button. And let's get right to it. We have a question here. This question is from Christopher. He'd like to know, so for the Aetna folks, where did you see the majority of your cost reductions come from?
I think we talked about that a couple slides back, but a lot of it was after Data Power came here and we saw how quickly we were able to get services rolled out for a project. So originally, because it was code-based, it took a lot longer, and there was no real standards people could follow. So a lot of that was seen in the whole, just the projects that came through with different customers, internal projects, and that's kind of where we saw a lot of it. I don't know if Mesh has...
Oh, you nailed it. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You know, the quick response time for customers and the quick speed at which we were able to create the web services, which we could not have done without Data Power. With just WebSphere, on a Java on WebSphere or CICS, it would not have been possible.
Okay, we have another question here, and this question is from Joel. And Joel would like to know, he says, please tell me more about the IBM Lab Advocacy Programs. What has Aetna's participation with the program helped it to achieve?
I think that the program is great because we get to be in touch with someone at Aetna who has feelers out, someone at IBM who has feelers out within IBM to pull out resources for all the different products. We have a lot of different IBM products here at Aetna, and we integrate with a lot of them. So when we have one person we can go to pull those subject matter experts in, it's been really helpful. The other thing is anytime we're starting to move down a new path, firmware upgrades, new functionality, and it's not always a problem per se, but we're trying to figure out how to do something in a certain way. You don't necessarily want to open a PMR ticket. It's sometimes you just need someone to tell you, here's the best way to do it, and here's kind of where. And that's where I think we've seen the most benefit. And we have a good relationship with ours.
Yeah, and this is Andy. So I could speak to that shortly as well. I would just say that it's mutually beneficial. It's great for IBM to get some of our key development leaders out of the lab and into customer-facing situations where they can really understand firsthand the challenges that our clients are using as they implement our software and what the problems that they're, you know, the problems they're facing, the problems they're trying to solve. So it's really usually beneficial to both parties, both on the client side and on the IBM side. And I encourage, you know, everyone on the call to speak with their WebSphere brand leaders if they have interest in that lab advocacy program.
Okay, we have another question here. This is from Joe. Joe would like to say, what is the new hardware? So I guess he's asking what the new hardware was that was installed.
Oh, we haven't done it yet, and I'm not sure if I can share some of that internal information, but I will tell you we looked at the ones that are out there right now and tried to figure out what the best fit from a replacement perspective was. So maybe Andy can talk about some of this. Actually, we kind of did work with him on this. There's
sure.
The X-Site, the Blade, the Z, and the X-Site 52, right?
That's right. There's been some interesting evolution in the hardware over the past 12 to 18 months, I'd say. First, we released a Blade-based version of our X-Site 50, what we call the X-Site 50B, that you know is the appliance form factor in a Blade form factor that you can insert into a Blade center. provides, higher networking connectivity, 10 gig access, things like that, easier manageability, able to do, dark data center management, things like that. That led to our introducing the XI50Z, which is the XI50 meant to live in a ZBX container, which is, the blade center that can attach to a mainframe Z196. And so now you're harnessing, the power, the integration connectivity power of data power, but sitting right alongside the XI50Z and managed, the system Z environment, and managed within all the confines of Z with its, higher levels of availability and things of that nature. And then most recently we released the XI52, which, if you notice the screenshots that were scattered throughout the presentation, at the beginning, at the end, those are the black appliances. That's a new 2U version of the XI50 that we released in June. Offers, again, much more manageability, much more serviceability. We now have, 8 1-gig ports instead of just 4. We have 2 10-gig ports on it for the first time. Much more, higher performance. Everything's just kind of bigger, faster, more on it. But what's nice about all of these different appliance models that we provide is they all run the same firmware. So if you have configurations today on a given appliance model, it's really just an export-import. There's no refactoring of any of your configuration required across these different hardware models.
Hey, we're actually coming to the top of our hour, so we have time for just 2 more questions. This question actually comes from Randy. Randy would like to know, do you have any plans to use the X150Z on the SystemZ ZBX frame?
Well, we've actually we've looked at it. As far as plans,
we're neutral on that right
now.
We're still in the process of evaluating various hardware, so we don't have an answer, concrete answer on that right now.
But you never know.
Okay. So one more question here. We have a question. This is from Uriah, and they would like to know, do you have a load balancer in front of your architecture or an SSL load balancer?
Sorry, Well,
we do have, it depends on where the request is coming from. We do have F5 to send the request out to our data power boxes, but once we have it at data power, we use the data power's built-in load balancers to go to other backends from there. So we do have a mixture of F5 and data power load balancing capabilities.
Okay, well, with that, we've come to the end of our Q&A session. There were plenty of questions that we just didn't get to, but the wonderful thing is the folks at IBM and Aetna will be able to follow up, and there actually are email addresses right there on that form, so you can actually reach out and email any of the folks who were speaking today, and thanks to all three of them. And thanks to everyone out there for attending today's webcast. Aetna's commitment to IBM WebSphere data power appliances drives faster SOA adoption and integration, which has been brought to you by Information Week, IBM, and UBM TechWeb. For more information about today's webcast, please visit any of the resource links that are open before you. Within the next 24 hours, you will receive a personalized follow-up email with details and a link to today's presentation. Additionally, you can view today's event on demand by visiting www.netseminar.com. This webcast is copyright 2011 by United Business Media, LLC. The presentation materials are owned by or copyrighted, if that's the case, by Information Week and IBM, who are solely responsible for their content, and the individual speakers, who are solely responsible for their content and their opinions. On behalf of our guests, I'm Karen Bannon. Thanks for your time, and have a great day.